Now that we are done with the raga, the tala, let's move on to the aspect of bhava. Brother Sonam Gyamso, an alumnus of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, who has had the opportunity of singing at the lotus feet of Bhagwan for more than 10 years and has been blessed to compose several Sai Bhajans and is deeply engaged in the Sai Bhajan movement in India and elsewhere, over a conversation he now shares his reflections on this bhajan. Sairam Brother Sonam, and welcome once again to Radio Sai Bhajan Classroom.
Sairam Vishu, thank you so much for being instrumental in bringing me here once again.
I'm really so happy that you are here today, because this is the first Bhajan Classroom where we are discussing about bhava in the new year. Today is January 2nd, 2016.
What a privilege for me.
And I'm really happy that, you know, we are doing a Ganesh Bhajan. A way to begin the new year, begin a new bhava session of Bhajan Classroom than with worshipping this most beautiful, beautiful God.
You told me we are doing Gajavadana Gananathanatha.
Yes,
and that beautiful melody called Raksoni.
Raksoni, yeah. If you can share with us, what occurs to you when you sing this bhajan?
Whenever I think of this bhajan, it takes me back to those days when in Prashanti Nilayam, Raja Reddy Garu used to sing this bhajan.
Wow.
It was one of his pet bhajans.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I had the privilege to play harmonium for him many times.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just walk into the bhajan hall and sit with us and say, keep this scale. Normally he would sing it on a C. And then he would close his eyes and get into meditation. And the first bhajan, he used to sing so beautifully.
Maybe you should talk a little bit about Raja Reddy, sir, what you have seen. Because I think for all Prashanti Mandir bhajan singers and for everyone who aspires to be a singer, there are lessons to be learned from this tremendous personality who served Bhagwan as well as who delighted Bhagwan through his music.
Exactly.
And his service, isn't it?
Yeah, well, our association with Raja Reddy was limited to the bhajan sessions. Beyond that, we never had at that point of time a chance to really be with him and learn more from him. But then whenever I saw him, you know, he looked so resolute and so focused. And there was that beautiful bright radiance on his face. And he would just come there and tell the scale on which he would sing. And then he would close his eyes and then forget about everything. And then he would just deliver his bhajan. And those days, bhajan singing, even when we started playing harmonium, very conventionally playing harmonium. But when I was not a student, and I used to listen to the bhajan in the mandir right from the back, sitting right at the back, the bhajan used to go on with just harmonium serving the bass, you know, playing the bass scale. Just sapasa or, you know.
Just the shruti.
And then they would sing bhajan on that. No sophistication of tabla. In fact, those days there was no microphone also.
Mm.
I'm talking about around 1977 when I listened to him. I heard him for the first time.
Mm.
And this was one of the first bhajans that I heard from him.
And
in the later years to come, you know, I saw that man and my respect for that gentleman, for Raja Reddy, grew from, you know, day to day whenever I would see him. Because he would go straight to Bhagwan. He could go up to Swami's bedroom, I think. That's what I heard. But then he was all the time with Bhagwan. He used to sometimes even hold the parasol over Bhagwan, you know, whenever Swami would come in a procession. So he was a part of the divine entourage. And despite that, I never saw him put up a big air, you know, I'm one of the elite. It was never that. He would all the time talk to us very lovingly, all the time inspire us, always had a good word to tell us about whatever we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially singing bhajan, he would always encourage us and say, "Oh, you sang very well. Your voice is so good." Every time a positive stroke he would give.
Wow.
So I remember, I can just relate one beautiful incident. It was towards his maybe end of his singing session, wherein, you know, it's almost called burning the boat, wherein you don't require the boat anymore. These are all bhajans and all these instruments, like even a pair of, a rosary or any of these, are required till a certain part of the journey. But once you reach the shore, then you don't require it anymore. So probably he had reached that state, because one day he sat with us for bhajan, and then Swami sent word that he should not sing bhajan that day. Now for any one of us, that would be a corporal punishment. Like, we wouldn't be able to even imagine not singing bhajan. Because the first thing would be our ego would be, you know, pierced, like, it would be punctured. And when I was told that, the message was relayed to me, because I was playing harmonium. So I didn't know, because he had already told me the scale, and he was sitting just near me. He was sitting in deep meditation. And then after some time, Swami walked into the bhajan hall, and Swami sat on the throne, and Omkar started, and microphone was placed in front of him. He had to sing the bhajan, and Swami said, "Remove the mic. He is not singing." So I had to, you know, take the mic from him and give it to another boy. And then he just slightly opened his eyes and saw that the mic was not in front of him, and closed his eyes, and he was again in deep trance. Once the bhajan got over, he just squeezed my hand a little bit, comforting me. He was the person who was comforting me telling me, like, you know, you could feel from his gesture, he was telling me, giving me a lot of solace and telling me, "Don't worry, beta, it's understood." And then he left the hall, you know, to go where? Not to go to his room, to go to Swami's room. He is with Bhagwan all the time. He is having lunch, dinner with Bhagwan. And he is not singing bhajan anymore. And that state of equanimity, you know, that I saw in him. And later on, when I came to know that Raja Reddy was no more, then I shared this also with Brother Arvind and some of our brothers here. This one beautiful incident that I saw, a sage in person. And this Ganesh Bhajan reminds me of that sage who used to sing this. And it was so beautiful.
And when I think about it, you know, bhajan singing should lead us to that state, isn't it?
Definitely.
Bhajan singing should, if bhajan singing adds to our ego, then I think bhajan singing is only doing disservice to us.
Exactly. That's why if bhajan devoid of the bhava, bhajan is just another mere song, Swami says. Because as far as the names of gods are concerned, any name, any akshar is God's word. Anything, any syllable that we utter contains in it inherently Om. So even if somebody is abusing someone, there is Om in it also. So every word that we utter is a mantra. That is why Swami says, Mananatha Traite Iti Mantra. Etymologically, mantra means that. So every bhajan is a mantra which is sung in melody and rhythm. It's a mantra. So unless that bhava aspect is there to captivate the listener and the singer both, then bhajan is no more a bhajan. So whenever I think of some of these great sages who sang bhajans before Bhagwan, without any of those sophistications of a microphone or a tabla or whoever is doing what, just the person, just you and God, and the bhajan that unites us together. Such a beautiful experience.
Wow. And such a person starting the bhajan with a Ganesh Vandana, and this bhajan is so powerful. It just lifts you.
Powerful.
The first line itself is...
Exactly. It just lifts you. It elevates you completely. The line itself is like that.
Yes.
Very powerful. Can I just sing one line?
Please.
Gajavadena Gananatha Natha Gauri Bharatanaya Gunalaya Gajavadena Gananatha Natha. Such a captivating melody.
Actually, when this bhajan starts, it's like everyone is just shaken.
Yeah. Even if somebody is slightly dozing off.
Yeah.
You know, it just shakes you out of your sleep.
Yeah, it shakes you out of your slumber.
A full blast.
Yes.
So beautiful.
So powerful. And you know, when you are saying about Raja Reddy, sir, I was only imagining, you know, his powerful voice, you know, even in those days when there were no mics also, their voices were heard because
yes.
they had their voice had that much power, isn't it?
It used to, you know, filter out of the mandir. And people could hear it up to the hall, up to the, you know, the courtyard, the foreground of the mandir.
Wow.
People could hear it,
wow.
the bhajan going on inside the mandir.
What power
yeah.
their voices had. And I think as what lends that much power also to their voice is that purity within. You know, they become so hollow inside living with Bhagwan when bhajan actually becomes a sadhana for you.
Exactly.
Then, you know, it is not just your lung power, it is your soul power
exactly,
that sinks.
Exactly. Last time we were, you remember, Vishu, we were talking about what Swami told us about bhajan. It's one of the most wonderful things that we all need to, I think, you know, remember. That in a course of a bhajan, you are doing the most wonderful pranayama. A bhajan is a beautiful exercise in pranayama, you know. And Swami says that if you do a bhajan within the course of one bhajan, you are doing exactly all the passing through all the Arya and the Ashtanga Yoga
oh.
taught by Patanjali. So the bhajan is so powerful.
Wow.
Your posture is correct. Mm-hmm. Your thought process is right. Mm-hmm. Everything is correct about, everything becomes correct about you. When you are singing that, but that bhajan leads you to that.
Wow.
It's so powerful.
Because yoga is what? Yoga is union with God.
Union with God.
And bhajan is what, in essence, it is that medium which unites us with God.
Exactly.
So I think if you do a bhajan well, with raga, with tala, with bhava,
yeah,
then automatically you experience that unity with divinity. It
yeah.
becomes a yoga.
Yeah.
And when you look at the life of Lord Ganesha, the legend that
yeah.
is associated with Lord Ganesha, you know,
yeah.
he's worshipped as the Pranava Swarupa.
Yeah.
He's the source of, it is said that, you know, he granted the Pranava Mantra to Lord Shiva.
Lord Shiva, yeah. And he was also the, you know, the scribe. Like for the Mahabharata.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
One of his, you know, tusks
he
was
just
used.
Broke.
So he's Ekadanta.
Ekadanta. You know, two thoughts come to me. One is this aspect of being hollow.
Yeah.
This aspect of sacrifice.
Yeah.
When he was given this task of writing.
Yeah.
The Mahabharata. And when the pen broke, the stylus broke. He did not think even for a millisecond
yeah.
about getting another stylus or asking someone for a stylus or asking Vyasa if he has a stylus.
Yeah.
No, he just broke his tusk and
started
continued
writing.
To write.
Yeah, continued.
So the Lord's work cannot stop. And if it means that I have to give the best part of myself for an
yeah.
elephant, the tusk is what gives so much beauty to it.
Yeah.
The two beautiful tusks angled, that's what gives so much beauty to that face.
Beauty to that face.
Face. But he had no problem. You know, immediately he can just offer whatever is the most precious
yeah.
immediately without a second thought. And that's what is being an instrument of the Lord, being hollow, isn't it?
Exactly.
You can just give it because it is for the Lord's work.
Exactly. And with that one tusk, he looked more beautiful.
Yes.
You know, it's the wonderful act
yes.
of selflessness
sacrifice.
That lends beauty to your face. And then his countenance, he looked more beautiful yeah. also because, you know, with two tusks, it was emblematic of dualism.
Yes.
And one tusk is Advaita Anubhuti.
Yes, yes.
And he's the giver of Advaita.
Advaita.
Advaita Pradayak.
Wow. Yeah, because ultimately all the knowledge is the adhipati of
yeah.
Vidya and Buddhi. That is what we adore him
Yeah.
Within this song, those appellations of Vidyadayaka, Buddhi Pradayaka, Siddhi Pradayaka, that's what we adore him as. In
exactly.
fact, there was one occasion when Professor Venkatraman asked Swami, Swami, give me Vidya and Buddhi, you know. Swami said, no, that is not my department, you ask Vinayaka. I mean, there are two, three things. One is, you know, if you look at the life of Lord Vinayaka, because he considered his father and mother to be the universe,
yeah,
to be everything, the Lord gave him that position greater than him.
Exactly.
I think that is such a powerful yeah. lesson, isn't it?
Exactly. Definitely.
Once you recognize your parents, then God will give you the highest of
yeah,
of
if grace. You can't see God in your parents, then you won't find God anywhere.
Wow.
Then, of course, this also would mean for me, when you are, even when you are telling me this about Professor Venkataraman and that beautiful experience, you know, that's not my department. Ask Ganesha. It doesn't really mean that, you know, Lord Ganapati is a different department. But then that aspect of conferring Vidya Buddhi,
yes,
that enjoins, yes, even that desire enjoins a completely different set of sadhana. You know, and then once you get into that,
yes,
then you will, because you know the avatar as such is just the most beautiful embodiment of love and unconditional love. There are no conditions. Whoever asks him anything, you remember Swami would say, Sri Satya Sai is SSS, which is yes, yes, yes. So he would say yes to everyone. But then if you really want the core part of it, that you want Vidya and Buddhi, then well, you can derive Vidya Buddhi through this sadhana.
Yes.
Then he's a taskmaster.
Hmm.
It's not that, you know, Swami, I want to sing bhajan. Swami would tell the student, go and sing, no problem. And that boy would come to me, because I was playing harmonium at that point of time, and say that Swami has given me permission, I want to play. I want to sing. Give that scale. And I didn't know how to grapple with this problem, because that boy wouldn't be practicing. And then, but he would desire to sing. And Swami would say, Swami taught me what to tell that boy. Swami said, tell him that the permission granted is conditional. Permission is granted. But you have to practice. You have to deserve to sing. So Swami said, no sooner a child is born, a baby is born, he comes with this beautiful tag of emancipation, liberation. You are already liberated, but the condition is you are given a lifetime to work out your salvation. The condition is already there, and at the same time, it's also granted that you will get your salvation. But then depends upon what I do with my individual free will.
Yes.
If I utilize it properly, or if I can surrender myself using that free will, then he will take care. Yoga kshema mahamyaham.
Yes.
So that way, it's so beautiful.
Surrender.
Yeah, I just surrender.
And that's what Ganesha's life also teaches us.
Exactly.
Surrender. And just like that rat,
yeah,
which even though a mere rat,
yeah,
is today worshipped.
Worshipped. A rodent being worshipped.
Worshipped. Because it has surrendered to Ganesha. Because its focus is on the Ganesha. Even though there is prasadam in its hand, but its eyes are on the Ganesha.
Yeah, it doesn't eat the laddu.
Its eyes is only on the Ganesha.
Yeah, actually, that reminds me of one of the Ganesh Vinayak Chaturthis we had in during my early days in Vrindavan. So we used to have a very good sculptor among the students, my senior, Narayan Sharma, who unfortunately he's either sick or no more. Narayan Sharma had sculpted a beautiful Ganesha statue out of, with clay and, you know, hay. And it was so heavy that it the whole pedestal had to be lifted by so many boys together, and the, ultimately we put it in the right place in the in our bhajan hall, in the hostel. And then out of nowhere, a rat came and then got inside the, underneath the pedestal. And then, you know, we tried so many different ways of taking it out, but it would it just remained there. And then ultimately we left it there. And on the immersion day, when we were taking out the Lord Ganesha's statue from that place, the rat came out.
Oh, on its own again.
On its own again. So rat was staying there throughout.
Hmm.
Now what happened was,
so how many days of construction? Oh, puja, 10 days.
The whole 10 days.
10 days.
Because definitely, I don't know whether the rat was going around and again coming back and staying in this in its new, you know, hideout, whatever. Hmm. But then ultimately, when we removed the Ganesha, we lifted the Ganesha, the rat was there and it just ran away.
Hmm.
After the Vinayak Chaturthi, Swami came back to Vrindavan and the first thing he asked us was, how was my rat?
Oh, my God.
Swami asked us that.
Mm. So many ways he was letting us know about his presence. But
his
presence. That rat, as Bhagwan has explained, is that ignorance.
Ignorance.
That ignorance. Once it is surrendered.
Yeah.
You know, even a rat is worshipped. Because once we surrender our ignorance, then, you also reach a state where... you are also worshipped along with God.
Yeah, because you become a wise one then.
You become a wise one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once you know that all you have to do is keep your focus, however tiny you may be.
Yeah.
Ganesha is so huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
However tiny you are, how much ever an ignoramus you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Once you surrender to Him.
Yeah.
And keep your focus on Him, that is enough. He will lift you.
Definitely.
And you don't know to what heights you can go.
So beautiful.
There's another thought that someone had once shared with me, and I felt that was a very profound thing, because when you were mentioning about these chakras, apparently, when God made man, man is an ephemeral being, and man is a composite of body, mind and spirit.
Yeah.
Now, apparently, it was so difficult to pack inside a being called man, which has a body which is temporary, and permanent undying thing like the spirit, how to merge a permanent thing, an undying thing, into a dying object
like
the body.
Right.
So trying to put these two together, the permanent and the ephemeral, into one being, was apparently a very, very difficult task for the Creator to do.
Definitely.
And it happened only because at the Mooladhara Chakra, you have Ganesha as the presiding deity, as the Mooladhara Chakra in all the chakras that we have.
Beautiful.
It is Ganesha who balanced this.
Yeah.
Who is Ganesha who allowed a thing like the spirit to remain in a body which is so temporary.
It's such a beautiful esoteric explanation. It's so beautiful. Yeah.
So when you think about it, it is so much the basis of everything.
Definitely. So when you think of Ganesha from this stance, he is no more one of the gods in the pantheon, but he is verily Brahman.
Yes.
You know, the eternal principle.
Yes.
The absolute principle.
Yes.
Because this is how we, I think, look at it, even when you chant Ganana Antwa Ganapati Gum Havamahe. So Swami was once telling us about the, when you chant, you should know the meaning. And then here and there, he picked up certain important aspects of the beautiful description there, and telling us about, and this was happening in the bhajan hall, in the mandir. Swami was telling us, what is Kavim Kavi?
Kavim Kavi Naam.
Yeah, Kavim Kavi Naam. What is the meaning? And he was telling us that God, as the absolute reality, as the absolute principle, is the poet of poets. And he said, it is also saying that he is the king of kings.
Yes.
Because the poet alone stands a head and shoulder above the rest of humanity.
Yes.
Because the poet has, Swami said, a poet is endowed with eyes that can see beyond what is seen.
Oh, wow.
So it is, Swami said, such a person is called Krantadarshi. Krantadarshi is one who sees through what is, whatever is seen around.
What is obvious.
Yeah, what is obvious, he sees beyond that. So a true seer is one who sees beyond whatever is seen around us.
A poet is a seer in that sense.
A poet is a seer. And a poet of poets, because a poet also, Swami said, is one whose imaginations transcend everything.
Hmm.
You know, we are not, last time we were talking about the Chitakasha, Bhutakasha,
Yes.
So he is a person who, is all the time, living in infinity.
Hmm.
His thoughts are infinite.
Hmm.
His imaginations are infinite. So such a person alone can be called God. So God is a poet from that angle. And one who is a Krantadarshi. That is why he said the Lord Ganesha has got very, small eyes.
Hmm.
And Swami said, small eyes, but it goes very, very far and it sees everything all around.
Hmm. Wow.
So it was such a beautiful, description of Lord Ganesha coming from Bhagwan.
Wow. Small eyes means you can see far.
So see far and wide.
Far and wide.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Wow.
He was telling about Jyeshtha Rajam, that Lord, King of Kings. He is the most senior among the kings.
Among the kings.
Yeah. And he is Brahman.
Yes.
So that is what matters. In our imagery, iconographically, people can talk so much about Ganesha and how he looks. But then ultimately Ganesha symbolizes the ultimate, the absolute principle.
Absolute principle.
So from that angle, when you look at it, look at Ganesh. Ganesh is the Lord of everybody.
Yes, he is that most majestic.
The most majestic.
Majestic phenomenon of this entire cosmos.
Yeah.
And this bhajan is like that, isn't it?
Yeah,
definitely. It arouses in you that majesty.
Definitely.
When we sing every line and when it goes high, the only feeling that you get is of grandeur and of someone who's so...
expansive.
So expansive.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It just opens you up.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah. It leaves you with no further inhibition.
Yes.
No blockades anywhere. The bhajan is like that. The moment you sing, it's so brilliant.
Yes. I think that is fantastic. And so I think this is a bhajan which definitely needs a lot of practice, because you really need to deliver it well for it to have that... give that experience to yourself and to everyone, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly.
Beautiful. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Bhagwan, for bringing me here once again and giving me this rare privilege.
Sairam.
Jai Sairam.